Hey everyone, welcome to Make Me Like This. I am Jeff, and yeah, I just point the opposite way and I can point to Brandon. And this is Brandon.
Hello, good afternoon, good evening, whatever. I don't know what time it is. It's Friday night. It's been a long week, and we decided it'd be a good time to unwind, have a beverage, and record an episode. So thank you guys for joining us. And if you're new to this show, it's called Make Me Like This, where one of us will bring a topic or a thing, a show, a piece of art, and try to make the other person like that thing. At the end of the show, we will ask, do you now like blank? And if the person says yes, kudos to the presenter. If not, then banishment from the towns in which we live. So Jeff has got a topic for us tonight. Jeff, what do you got for us?
I'm going to make you like New Year's resolutions.
Oh, boy.
Do you like New Year's resolutions? Because the last episode, I just started talking, and then about halfway through, I came to realize that the thing I was trying to make you like, you already liked.
I don't like New Year's resolutions. No? I can give you some reasons why, but do you want me to start off by telling you the reasons why?
Yes.
Well, I feel like it is arbitrary, and it is centered around the desire to publicly state something, because it is January 1, because of the box in which we live in that calendar. It's just a thing you do, and it's not driven by a desire to get better often. I think it's more often a result of wanting to participate in this societal activity. And they usually end not long after the year starts. Right. So, I don't have any problem with anyone, trying to better themselves, trying to lose weight or stop drinking or stop smoking or, trying to learn to skateboard on a half pipe. I don't know, whatever you want to do. But it just the construct of it to me seems really superficial. And I know that's probably a very hokey thing to say, but there's just something about it that, in pre-COVID times, December 31st, gym empty, there's tumbleweeds going through. And then January 1st, January 2nd, it's packed to the brim and everyone's like on this treadmill train. So I don't necessarily disagree with the practice of it. It feels weird to me to say like, okay, it is this date. I am going to say, I'm going to do this next year. So that's a very pessimistic look at it. I don't tend to be a pessimistic person, but to me, it just feels weird. It feels weird to do it. Just like it feels weird to profess your love on February 14th any differently than any other day of the year. So that's kind of my standpoint, and I would encourage you to try to change that.
Do you ever wonder, like, are all the holidays in the crappy months of the year just so that people have, like, motivation to get through the next month? Why isn't Valentine's Day in mid-June? Because, like, I feel like you could do so much better on a date than in the dead of winter, don't you think?
I think you're showing your Michigan bias, because if you live in Florida, it doesn't matter. Yeah. It's all nice. It's all nice.
Well,
it's
just, if you live in Florida, you got other things that are a problem.
You got the COVID if you live in Florida.
Literally, you have the COVID.
You have a 97% chance of having the COVID. I think that is a result of us living for our entire lives in a state that is gloomy and gray for 6 months out of the year.
Sure. So here's a question, and I'm going to pull from memory, so factual inaccuracies abound. I think that the I think Nowruz is an Arabic holiday, and I could be wrong, but some cultures celebrate the new year in spring. And in alignment with the renewal of the seasons, because spring is a rebirth, right?
Yeah.
If you were to make a resolution with like, okay, it's I understand in coming in December and the weather gets awful and then it gets worse into the new year. It doesn't feel like it's aligned with anything. And so I agree with the arbitrary new year with that. Would changing it to align with something that felt like a reawakening make any sort of difference? Or is it more with the with it being a time that everyone does it and it in a resolution you feel shouldn't be locked at all to a common time of the year that people decide to adopt it and should be more like of a personal awakening? Or is it like something to do with the seasons or something else that makes it feel really arbitrary and hokey?
Well, you know, at the risk of sounding like a fuddy-duddy, in our last episode, I kind of talked about striving to not be so like mainstream, like liking everything because everyone else likes it, doing something because everyone else is doing it, with the exception of hammer hangers on your pants. I bought into that. You know, what if?
Is that the chain? Is that the chain wallet thing, or is that something different?
No. This is like a denim jean, but built into the side is like a loop that's stitched in. That, you know, if you're a carpenter, you just slide your trusty old hammer in there.
You're Jinko's up on a ladder. Had those, didn't they?
Who did?
JNCOs were like a type of pants, I think,
or maybe,
and maybe FUBU's had them.
Possibly. Yeah. Yeah. Maybe, I mean, this was like 97, that
it was a good year.
I was guilted into getting some hammer hanger pants. I had a girlfriend who, was upset at the fact that I didn't have hammer hangers on my pants. And so I was like, okay, well, I guess I can get a pair of those. And I bought a couple. And then, like, we were broken up a couple months later. I was like, what am I going to do with these stupid pants? I don't do any manual labor. Like, what am I going to do? Wait, put a juice box in there?
I think that was a hint. Did you break up with her or she break up with you?
I don't know.
I think she was telling you to get a job and she wanted you to get on the roof and start putting the shingles down.
It had nothing to do with the pants. It's like, I want you to have a profession. I want you to learn a trade because you're playing Street Fighter 2 with your buddies all day and eating 50-cent gorditas. You got to get out.
And you don't share the Mountain Dew. You cleared a 12 rack of Mountain Dew in an afternoon and didn't let me have any.
Tough cookies, man. You gotta.
Do you recall? I remember when I was a kid, and we were probably like sitting around us in the neighborhood. We used to play a lot of street hockey in the neighborhood. If you can believe that I played street hockey as a kid. But for some reason, I associate this with that. We used to drink Mountain Dew like it was some sort of like commercial,
like it was Gatorade, like during.
Yeah, like it was Gatorade, and we had like the real sexy like side angle shot, and we never put the bottle to our lip, just held it up like that because we were awesome. Astronaut helmet fell over. But I remember my friends being like, you know, Yellow 5 makes you sterile, right? So like when you drink that, it kills all your sperm.
Yellow, and that's an ingredient in Mountain Dew that makes it, it look like urine.
It's an artificial color. Yeah, yeah, to make the urine color of it.
Ooh.
But you know, I've got two kids, so I prove that wrong, and I really hammer the Mountain Dew.
Do you wear full gear in street hockey? Do you wear pads and helmets and whatnot? It's just
we were just in skates and sticks. Yeah, I think we wore our gloves. Those of us that had them, but a lot of guys didn't, and it taught you good habits about like keeping your stick down and not getting up, like slashing on people's hands, keeping it lower on the stick. So except for the goalie pads, and usually goalies were the only ones that played in shoes, which made
goalies played in shoes so that they could block and
side to side a little bit easier. It's really hard to play goalie.
Ice hockey goalies don't get to wear like friggin' bricks on their shoes to keep them give them some extra stability. Why should street hockey goalies?
You know what they should have is the shoes that those curling people have to wear, like they got little spikes in them. That would make them.
Do they really? I didn't know that.
Yeah. I've never been curling. I want to be.
Are there places you can curl?
I think locally, I think at Summit you could curl.
Just recreationally, you don't have to be a licensed curler. You don't have to be Canadian. You can just pop in and grab a broom.
I don't know about drop in curling sounds fun though. It could be one of those things where like curling seems like a hardcore sport that people play and there's like a cult around it.
Yeah.
And I think bowling is similar, but like people are really into bowling and there's a atmosphere of like that grimy, you know, in the past smoky atmosphere, and everyone's there for the bowling. Right. But then hipsters get a hold of it and you got like places like you've been to Punch Bowl Social in Detroit, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
And places where bowling becomes just like an activity at a super hip establishment.
Yeah.
And it changes the clientele and it changes the attitude around the sport. I feel like curling could be that thing. Like they could make it more accessible if they put it into a environment where there was other things going on and it became part of like this hipster Dave and Buster's experience.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and it's like, it seems like an excuse to structure activity that's conducive to, you know, eating and drinking and just, chit chatting away. And then it's like, oh, hey, it's your turn. You gotta go, throw the rock, or you gotta go, bowl the ball. I don't know, man.
And you might think it's like dangerous because you're on ice and you got those big stones and someone could get hurt if they got wasted, but shoot, they got axe throwing with drinking. So, I mean, if they can do that, they can do curling.
I was at a place that had axe throwing one time. And as I was walking by, like, you know, you could walk behind them and there's like a plate of glass where plexiglass where you can like kind of watch and see what they're doing and get all jazzed up to, you know, to pay to go in inside to do that. And I swear to God, as I'm walking by and I stop and I watch this dude throw, chucks it at the wall, bounces back and hits the plexiglass right in front of me. I'm like, okay, who wants go-karts?
Hard pass.
Who wants to check out Galaga? Because I'm not standing around here anymore. So tell me what you personally like about New Year's resolutions. Do you partake in that?
I've never done a New Year's resolution intentionally.
Yeah.
It's never been something that I feel the same way you do about it. I'm not going to do a thing because it's the time of year to do it, or that other everyone else is doing it, and I want to be on board with it. In December last year, I decided to do something that was fairly easy to start with. I wanted to see how big of a beard I could get.
Yeah. And was that the last time you shaved?
I've trimmed several times since then. If I hadn't, I would be really, really gross. Yeah. And have birds and probably, yeah. Be looking like God in the Lego movie.
Yes.
But
which is canon, by the way.
It is canon.
Yeah, that's how he was described in the Bible, is long beard and made of plastic.
And in three modular parts.
Yeah.
The thing was, is I just decided I wanted to grow a beard, and it just so happened to be in December. And also, right around the end of the year last year, I got a really bad stomach bug, and I missed all of. Well, let me back up. My yearly appointment with my doctor is in mid December every year. And I got my blood work done, and I was my glucose was high enough to be pre-diabetic.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And then about a week later, I got sick, and it was during, you know, the Christmas New Year time there, and I stayed home and sat on the toilet. And the rest of my family went to Julie's family's holiday stuff. So I just totally missed out on the holidays because I was sick for like 5 or 6 days. Like it was pretty rough. And I lost 12 pounds doing that.
Yeah.
And actually, that's probably the last time I was alone.
Really?
if you can believe it. Like the last time I was in the house by myself, because then, you know, everyone's quarantining now. And if you live alone, you've probably been alone a lot. But if you don't live alone, you haven't been alone.
Yeah.
So anyway, there was a lot of stuff going on. And I had actually subscribed to Noom right around that time because I was like, I got the glucose blood results back, and, you know, the call from the doctor's office was, and it wasn't anything like serious. It was like, well, you're classified as pre-diabetic. And so your doctor says to like go easy on the bread.
Yeah.
Like cut down on carbs. And so it wasn't anything like I don't go to a doctor that's going to hypermanage me because I don't know that I would appreciate or take well to that.
Right.
So I had subscribed to Noom like days before I got sick, and then I got really sick and I had lost 12 pounds. And when I came out of it, I had a goal right around the end of the year there. I was like, I'm not gaining these 12 pounds back, but I'm going to get stronger and I'm not going to feel weak with this. So I'm just going to, you know, treat my body right. And then when I'm coming out of this, I'm going to get on Noom and just continue it. So like this, I dropped 12 pounds there and kept going with that until March. And I had lost about 30 pounds by that point.
In like 3.5 months.
Yeah. And then at that point, but the thing there, like in February and March, so like I'm losing weight, but I start really sucking at Sunday morning hockey. Like I got no energy. I feel like garbage. And so like I've been just doing what Noom tells me. And then, but I'm like, this isn't worth it. Like, if I'm going to feel like this when I'm doing something that I love, I'm not going to do it. So then, even though I'm still subscribed to Noom, I stopped in February and then just started doing a regular tracker mm-hmm. and a tracker app and just doing food input. And so then my goal was, okay, like I'm going to figure out like the calories in, calories out. I'm going to figure roughly like how many calories do I need to break even and fuel myself when I have a workout that's pretty intense, like hockey. What's a workout like jumping on the, I got a stationary bike for 30 minutes. So then like my improvement goal shifted. It wasn't, I didn't want to lose weight at that point. I wanted to kind of sustain. Well, like, so I got doing that. I started feeling slightly better, but I hit some other stride where I dropped another 10 pounds. So now I'm like 40, 45, I went to the doctor again for my yearly visit in December and I was down like almost 50 pounds.
Wow.
But since March, I haven't been trying to lose weight. I've just been trying to have energy and not overeat. I've always talked about like in the past, I remember having conversations with you that during lunch, I don't want to eat bread because if I eat too many carbs, then I feel like crap in the afternoon. Well, the problem was I was overeating consistently. Yeah. And when I overate, I would get a slump in my energy. So somewhere along that line around like early spring, it became like let's get consistent energy. Let's make sure we work out every day. Let's like try to strive for just this, this fuel intake approach to eating. And then around midsummer, I was like, okay, my new challenge is to not track the calories of this food. I'm going to think about, I'm just going to weigh it. So I had a scale that whole time mm-hmm. to like track the calories. Like I'm just going to weigh it and I'm just going to go based on feel. Like when I put lunch meat on a sandwich, I know that I want 5 ounces of meat on there. So, so that I'm not tempted to have like two or three sandwiches. So I'm not like, bulking up on the bread. Like I became better at like looking at a piece of bread and knowing, hey, that's between 120 and 140 calories, that slice of bread. Yeah. You do two. That's so make a decision and just kind of like mental map it. Then, along the way it was like no scale. And so like, I'm making these incremental things. I would wake up one day and I'm like, you know what? I want to make sure that I jump on the bike at least every Wednesday night. Mm-hmm. So every Wednesday night, I'm going to target that. When hockey closed down again, like, okay, well, let's get on that. Let's watch the Lions while biking on Sundays.
Let's add pain to pain.
And yeah, yeah. But let's see how can you just like go as fast as you can on the bike for a period of a college hockey game? Let's get an audiobook. And so I'm motivating myself, like, let's do an entire chapter, not the certain time or whatever, but there's a period in there where I'm hitching it to that. So I don't really like doing everything that everyone else is doing. And I don't even think I needed to necessarily start that in December. In the moment, I didn't know I was starting a New Year's resolution. Mm-hmm. But what I've found is just this, this enjoyment might be the word, or like enjoyment from the structure that having a stretch goal or a self-improvement goal, maybe not like constantly and not having too many at once, but the kind of focus that brings me and the kind of satisfaction that just having that one personal thing burning at a time and making sure I don't overwhelm myself and making sure that I give myself, the opportunity to achieve it has been a really great addition to my life, because I feel like I looking back, I just let a lot of life happen to me.
Yeah.
I would make decisions professionally. I had a big impact on my professional life, but like with my personal life, I feel like I and I'm finding, especially during this time where everything is weird and I'm just confined to the one space, that sense of control that I get from that, and then also the understanding that the things that I should focus on are the little things that are within my grasp, rather than, my kid's emotional wellness is not fully my responsibility. Anything that's going on at work is not fully within my control, but I can wake up and jump on the bike every morning.
Yeah.
And I can wake up and make sure that I choose four eggs over two Pop-Tarts. And I can do these things that make me feel like I'm in charge a little bit, and that I'm centered, and that I've got my routine in place. And I think the spirit, and I really believe this now looking at it, I think that's the spirit of a New Year's resolution, is that it's a ceremonial and perhaps hokey thing, but it is an opportunity and a reminder that self-improvement can make us, can be fulfilling. The pursuit, because I don't think it's necessarily the achievement. I can't remember the day that I stepped on a scale and was like, yeah, like this is the weight that I needed to be. It's the process of pursuing that that was the most enjoyable. And a matter of fact, when I got to a point where it was like, I guess I've lost enough weight now. The thing that motivated me was like, I have no energy at hockey though. Like, so I was like on to the net, like, okay, how do I maintain this thing that I did while pursuing the next thing? So it's like, it's the process, the act of doing and appreciating that ritual, to me has been a fulfilling experience.
Well, where did that rigidity come from? Where did that structure came from? Because you talk so much about like that structure being what allowed you to kind of adopt the mindset to transition into this, more mindful eating patterns and exercise patterns and stuff like that. Did that come from Noom? Did that like that service you paid for, did it build that in to your, to your day?
Yeah, it's probably good to critique Noom a little bit. I think Noom, I would recommend Noom to folks for the psychology part of it. Mm-hmm. it was really helpful for me to read about, for instance, that when the feeling of fullness that we crave, it's a biological reaction to ensure that we get enough nourishment to keep our body going.
Yeah.
But our body is not like a glucose meter or like something that's actually measuring the nutrients as we intake. It takes, you know, 20 to 30 minutes up to an hour for us to start extracting the energy from that food. Our stomach, while we're eating, is functions on like how much weight, how much volume is in our stomachs. So eating a big salad with some protein topping it, which protein, especially lean proteins, are going to be less calories than having a bunch of croutons with the carbohydrates. But like it was more on like reading that and thinking and retraining my brain to think, oh, I don't need to have pizza to feel full, right? I don't need to reading about like these different levels of fullness, like pleasantly full versus simply content, ranging all the way to like completely bloated and food coma on the couch.
Yeah,
like I had either been conditioned or conditioned myself over time that like fullness was when you can't move anymore and you need to go and rest. Mm-hmm. And if I was at home, that would mean, you know, passing out on the couch. And if I was at work, that meant like doing a head bob at my desk. Yeah. And maybe putting on the Weekend at Bernie shades to keep people thinking that I'm alert.
Oh, man.
But it's, so those articles based on psychology and the psychology of eating, and then also educating me on, there's a lot of different diets, a lot of different advice. And I think there's more sophisticated ones, like people do macros. I don't fully understand macros, but like, especially people that are trying to optimize their body for performance and build muscle, like the CrossFit folks and everything like that. Like I got all the respect in the world for what they do, but like that's some like seriously complicated stuff. Noom talks like about three different zones where it's like a green, yellow, and red zone. And like the green zone is like all these leafy vegetables that have low calorie density. And then it goes all the way to the red foods, which are like really calorie dense. Like your cakes have a lot of calories per weight, where, you know, asparagus has, and broccoli, you can pretty much eat all you want of that, and you're never going to take in enough calories to really make for a meal. But it gave me some perspective about just how to think about food. What it sucked at is that it didn't seem to be personalized to my weight very much, and as I was losing weight, it didn't adjust to help me kind of like, I guess it's not really a plateau because I'm coming down, but like level out the valley that I was in. So I kept with the program, and it wasn't smart enough to like stop me at my weight loss goal. So I passed by my weight loss goal, and then that's why I was feeling shitty at hockey. Right.
Yeah.
And I was actually like feeling lightheaded, and I wasn't feeling energy from eating this way because I was actually inappropriately starving myself once I got to a certain point.
It feels so like a huge oversight on a program built towards weight loss, right? Is the assumption that you're at the same weight throughout? It feels weird.
You know what? Yeah, I felt like it wasn't working for me anymore when I got to a certain point, and that's why I stopped. Even though I had paid for it for the rest of the year, I had no idea that it was only going to take me 2.5 months to 3 months to lose 40 pounds. I mean, geez, like that. Or actually, I only lost 30 pounds at that point, but I was totally fine with that. And my goal was never to lose weight. It was to not be pre-diabetic anymore. Right. And that just comes along with that. I wanted to eat balanced, and I wanted not just to lose weight, but to change my habits to where when I sat down for dinner, I could eyeball appropriate portions and know, like right now I'm trying to get between 700 and 800 calories in a meal. And but while I was counting those and being laser precise as much as I could when I was learning how to do it, you know, then that goal becomes not being imprisoned to be counting these things forever, but to see it and to go on feel and to listen to my body and know what my body needs. And now I feel like I'm retrained. Like I can legitimately say that my understanding of fullness is different than it was a full calendar year ago.
Yeah.
And that's not to say like, I think that there's like real parallels to substance abuse, like addiction stuff, with how I feel about this stuff. Like every once in a while, like I get this monster voice in my head of like I see, you know, 24 cookies or like a whole strainer of pasta. Mm-hmm. And I just want to like handful, like eat the whole thing.
and for context, you used to, you know, as recent as a couple of years ago, get up in the middle of the night and eat an entire serving of leftovers or ice cream or whatever, just because you have, and maybe it wasn't hunger. I mean, it is probably partly hunger, but partly just that, wanting to chase that feeling of,
I forgot about that, Brandon.
Right?
I can't believe I forgot about that. Yeah.
Yeah. So that, I mean, that to me sounds like an addiction, right? Where it's like you get up and you need a fix, and you make yourself an entire meal and just go to town, regardless of how late it was.
Fire. I would wake up and I get this feeling, and I haven't had it in a while, where my back just starts itching all over, and then it feels like it's burning. Mm-hmm. And I sometimes I would wake up like that, and instead of just getting some ice water, I'd go for a pint of Ben and Jerry's and just kill some tonight dough. And that's like, what's a whole thing of Ben and Jerry's? Is that like 1,000 calories or something that?
At least it's got to be more than that, depending on if it's a chubby hubby or not.
Yeah. Now I do this old man thing where I wake up in the middle of the night and I just go sit on the toilet and pee. because like I don't trust myself to stay steady enough to stand.
You don't
want to
turn on the light, you know, and wake your eyes up. You gotta have trust in the system that most people use. More than half of the population uses. It's the sit down. It's cleaner.
It's
relaxing.
My oldest son just obliterates our toilet. And it's just it's like a white cow with yellow spots. It's not a good situation. Did you go through that when you had a toddler boy or
a potty trained boy? Yeah, I mean, I think that there is definitely a stretch where your entire house smells like piss. Not just the bathroom, but you know, you could be in the garage and yeah, that's a urine smell. One of the cool things is that when my son was potty training age was when both my wife and I were working, and he'd go over to stay with my dad because he was retired at the time before my mom was, and he'd stay over there, you know, for, you know, a couple days a week while my wife worked, and he was like, I'm gonna potty train him. And so there was a good portion of that that messy stage that was at my parents' house that we didn't have to deal with as much. But that being said, there was still a significant piss-soaked era, you know, in our household. So we moved because that house was ruined. You might want to look for houses because two boys in a short stretch of time, you're going to feel a musk in the house that doesn't come out.
There was something in there. Was it your father or was it your mom that I don't know. I said your dad formal and your mom informal. I feel like your dad deserves my respect. And somehow your mom doesn't. I don't freaking know.
Wow.
I don't know.
Jesus. Lean in, Jeff.
What motivates a person to say, I'm going to potty train a kid? Like, that's not theirs. Like that's a stretch goal, right? That's a goal. Like, they're just making an improvement goal. It does have to do with not just themselves. It's like this, like what's there? What do people get from just deciding that they're going to set out to accomplish something that's kind of mundane? And eventually eventually people are going to figure, like, eventually your kid's going to figure out how to pee. The thing about potty training is patience because it's going to happen.
Yeah.
But what is it about, like, setting a goal, like, in 2 weeks, I'm going to make sure that he can go to the bathroom without going in his pants and reasonably hit the water instead of the floor?
Well, I think that, you know, any goal without a target date probably isn't going to happen. You know, you kind of have to give yourself a benchmark. Otherwise, you know, slow incremental doesn't accomplish anything. So it feels like you've got to give it some sort of a benchmark. And then there's like there's certainly a financial aspect too. Like, I don't want to buy diapers and wipes and,
sure,
you know, fillers it's been so long since I've had this. What are those things that the diaper genie, you know, you put it in there and then it just sits there and rots because it's not at all smell proof. So you're just creating this beacon in the center of your house that's like full of dung and doesn't smell good. But you know, in terms of, you know, a grandparent doing that, I think it's just kindness and saying like, hey, I'm here. I don't want to change your diaper, but why don't we try this? And he'd done it four times with his own kids. So
sure.
Why not?
I think that there's a kindness factor there. Like, these poor new parents are just like literally in the shit every day.
Yeah.
I can do this for them. And then the opposite side of that is, I remember this. There's like a bit of a revisionist nostalgia about just like, you know,
yeah.
Other people's kids, your grandkids are probably, you get more of the good stuff and less of the shitty stuff.
Yeah.
But I think there's another factor in there too, where like, I think that we are, I don't know if it's conditioned or it's just wired in us to pursue things where it, you know, once you potty train a kid, it's a real sense of accomplishment. It's probably equally as valuable in the midst of it when you start to see the little breakthroughs, like when you see your kid growing, and you see yourself getting, you know, like making progress. That's encouraging, and that's I think there's endorphin releases from that. Once the kid's potty trained and peeing is just a generic, you know, part of your day, like you don't get an endorphin release when your kid successfully goes down the hallway, closes the door, does their business, and comes back out anymore, because it's expected and it's been happening so long that it's not a thing. But you still have goals for your kids.
Sure.
Whether it's just the pursuit of like purely excellent things, or like there's a barrier in the way that you've got to get around. First off, it feels better to make progress than to not make progress, and just sit still and live in it and just accept it. It feels good to feel like you're taking action, to reach your goals, to alleviate whatever issues are going on. But as soon as you accomplish it, when there's that finality, if you don't replace it with something else, then the feeling's gone. I don't know. There's not too much stuff that you revel in for an extended period of time, yet alone a lifetime. I know that you were the Tri-County MVP for basketball in the early 90s.
Yeah.
But you might be still living off of that. But that's not going to keep your happiness for forever. You know what I mean? Right, like those accomplishments, right. Even though you can look back from time to time with nostalgia on your high school days, your college days, it is the chase and the culmination. It's the memories, at least in my opinion. I don't feel like the memories are something I can reach back and get satisfaction, too much satisfaction from, and especially not an endorphin release, like feel good about my day because 30 years ago I did something pretty cool.
Yeah. I mean, I think the further you get away from it, I think the more you can take a step back from yourself and appreciate it, because you're not wholly in it anymore. But with you know, parenting, it's okay. They're onto solid foods, and then, you know, maybe it's potty training, and then it's, you know, getting dressed yourself, and then feeding yourself, and then being able to do your homework yourself, and you know, doing well in school, doing well in athletics, doing, you know, there's all these incremental things that you're kind of like getting, you're so focused on that next challenge that you're not even thinking about, oh, I didn't have to tell him how to pee anymore. You know, it's right. Just, it's like, oh, I'm teaching you how to drive, you know, and then you're not thinking about the last three steps because they just become part of your routine and it's invisible to you. It's just like you get in the car and you drive home from work. You're not thinking, okay, I need to take a left here and then get on this ramp and do that. It's just autonomous, you know? And because after that first dozen times or so, it just becomes part of your pattern. So when that next challenge comes in, okay, well, now I'm starting a new job over at this different place, and, you know, traffic at that time is a little different. So I've got to, you know, adjust and stuff. But, you know, it's those micro challenges across the way that sort of get your focus. And then when you're so far removed from potty training, you'd be like, oh man, that wasn't that bad. That was what, a couple of weeks? Wait, a year? Oh, wow. Felt like nothing, you know? And it's just the perspective you gain from time and distance, I think is something you'll find that you can get that joy from. And, you know, I think I've told you on a couple of occasions that, you know, as my kids get older and I go back and I watch just short videos I shot on my phone of them doing nothing but like sitting on the floor and playing with, you know, a toy car or something like that. And at the time it's like, this is a waste of footage, you know, why,
yeah,
what use is this? Just a random, you know, minute and a half of him sitting on the kitchen floor, you know, playing with toys. But then 10 years later, now I can go and watch a 4-year-old version and relive that. And I wish I had a camera going the whole time so I could relive those things, because there's certain things that, like, as you're dealing with a teenager, you forget about, oh, this was that baby. This was that, you know, that helpless little, you know, little toddler. It's weird, man, but it's like, we have the affordance of these phones and 4K video. My goodness, if I had 4K video from when they were little, when I was little, I mean, think about so many things in the 80s that just, you know, who carried a camera around with them? Not a lot of people, right? And if they did, yeah, you took like at most 12 pictures for an event or something. And then you had to rewind the, you know, the film cartridge or whatever. Gosh, man, I wish we had these growing. I kind of do and I kind of don't, because there's some stretches in there that I am glad are not documented, like that awkward phase when your body is growing faster than the rest of you. Like certain parts of your body are growing in different, you know, in different directions and different cadences that weren't the most photogenic of times. But man, it's crazy. We have a photo studio in our pockets. We have a clearer camera quality than they used to shoot The Wizard of Oz in our pockets, you know? So it's, I don't even remember how we got onto that. But, you know, talking about mini goals and getting from challenge to challenge to challenge to challenge and driving you to, you know, to that next challenge each step of the way. But I'm curious, circling back to the concept of New Year's resolutions and stuff, weight loss is a big one, right? Mm-hmm. Can you think of any other ones that you've seen someone set and be successful at? Because they almost always seem to be surrounding health, you know, beauty, weight.
Let me see here.
I think like stopping drinking, you know, is probably one of them that still speaks to
addiction body, right? Stuff is probably
maybe
pretty big. Let's see. I'm just looking popular New Year's resolutions.
Yeah, let's hear them.
These are the most popular New Year's resolutions for 2021. Get a new job.
Okay. That seems like something that you either do or you don't, right? That's not like a okay, I got a new job. Now what?
Let's see here. Let's get a little bit of a visual. Yeah. So, okay, find love.
Okay.
get a new job, make new friends.
look at that guy who's, you think the hoodie guy is the one who made the friend? Because he looks way happier than the other guy.
That's like a really good question.
He looks like someone tried to draw Owen Wilson from memory and failed.
Oh, the guy on the right is like looking over and is like, I can't go anywhere. This guy is, he's got his hand on my shoulder.
This guy now lives with me. Okay, travel more.
Travel more. I mean, how is that? I mean, I guess for 2021, people are hoping to leave their homes.
Yeah. Anything would be more.
Save money or get out of debt. And the number one is exercise and or lose weight.
Sure.
And this is the credible Best Life source.
Best Life. Never heard of it, but it's a good name.
I mean, there's some variety there. I think I know of people that may have made resolutions like find love and get a new job on a regular, like it's all about identifying what you're unhappy about in your life and making a resolution that going forward, you're going to change your behavior to try to change that. I mean, it might seem ridiculous to think like find love. It's not something that's completely up to you. But I think within that is like, I'm going to be more open to love. I'm going to be, I'm going to look at myself and understand the things that maybe have inhibited me to being in the right place at the right time. And I'm going to, I'm going to try to give myself over to it if I see it, or, you know, change my definition or my understanding of what it feels like. And the get a new job. Go on The Bachelor. Yeah, absolutely. The get a new job. Like you gotta at some point in time, people go through ebbs and flows where they're unhappy with what they're doing at their job. So I could see that, like, man, this has been a rough year. I'm gonna put in applications at places, and I'm gonna go out there and see if a change of scenery with my profession can help me kind of feel better about what I'm doing. So,
yeah, it feels like a very fixable, like, short-term goal. I guess there's more to it than that. And, you know, it's gotta be the right thing. You have to have the right opportunity, the right credentials. But it feels as though something which is more of a lifestyle change, a health change, a diet change. This is like, there's an end goal, right? Like, when you get a new job, then you've completed it, where everything else, you know, you just talked about how your journey to changing the way you think about eating is an ongoing thing, right? That's to me was a resolution. I'm changing this about my life. I guess changing a job is changing significantly a portion of your life. But it is very close-ended, right?
Yeah, it's close-ended until you start that job and then you start to live it. And then you see whether it's fulfilling or not, right? Yeah. And jobs can start fulfilling and get worse and get better and get worse and then be just kind of meh. And then all of a sudden you're 20 years in and you got to decide whether you're going to change again or, you know, I get through to retirement. I guess that's my thing to you is that, like, we set destinations that we want to get to because we envision that we would be happier once we got there. And we may or may not be. And even if we are, we might not stay happy getting to that point. Right. But the thing I think that is underrated about it, and at least that I've found to be true, and maybe it's not true for everyone, is that the actual pursuit of those goals make me happy. They give me and more than just happiness, like they give me purpose. They give me routine. If I'm jumping on the bike, it's an endorphin release. So it regulates the chemicals in my body. If it happens to be during a period of time where I can ride a real bike, it's enjoyable alone time and good scenery outside of my house. So these are things that can make real, can change the chemical balance in your body and set you up to be a little bit more optimal, not to get to optimal feeling. But you know, the eating part, like not overeating, helps me to level out my energy level a little bit. And so, yeah, I think for, you know, if you've got real, for me, it started with a health issue. It's not the worst thing in the world. It's not the best, but it was a thing that made me think, you know, like I don't want to continue to go down that road.
Right.
And, you know, helping me think about it, it's probably not necessarily a New Year resolution. It just happens to be that my annual doctor visit is in December. And so it just, I'm going to get I just had my yearly visit yesterday, and I'll do my blood work here in the next coming weeks. And that's kind of the culmination of the big goal that I set a year ago is I hope that my numbers are down. And if they're not, I'm going to say, dang, that's really disappointing. But like, what more can I do now? Do I have to think even further? Because it's not a guarantee. Like the weight loss does not mean less glucose in my blood.
Sure. That's true.
And so I'm still, even though I've had like my goals have changed, like I've lost sight and came back to this end of the year test. I'll admit when I was down 30, 40 pounds, like I didn't care about that glucose score anymore because I felt sure. like accomplished in that. But now it's come back to that because really that's what it needs to be. So I don't know, man. It could just be how you look at it. Because like you said, you know, there's a lot of truth to what you said about looking back at videos of your kids. That you can get joy from that. But like looking back at videos of yourself might be annoying. But like, what do your kids think about the videos you're looking at? Do they derive the same sense of joy from it? Probably not. They don't have the context.
Yeah.
Or maybe they do. Maybe it
in some cases, not in the mundane ones, but the ones where something, you know, funny happens. I think that's fine. But you know, what you made me realize, I guess, you know, when I turned 40, I decided that I was going to make and post a new video to YouTube every single day of my 40th year, 365 straight videos without missing one. And, you know, talking about the journey, you know, that being, you know, not the end result, you know, which when I finished, I felt really good. But, you know, the reason I wanted to do that was because I used to create and then I stopped creating when I got, you know, busy as a parent, busy, you know, professionally, and just, you know, being tired at the end of the day. It's like, I don't have any reason to stay creative and to make stuff. So that was a way to get me to, you know, create a mechanism by which I held myself accountable and did it every day. And there was a lot of days of like, I don't want to do this. This sucks. So I'm literally going to just, you know, talk stream of consciousness for a couple of minutes and call it good. I did what I set out to do. And, you know, even though I hated that, and I've still not watched at least 80% of those videos ever since that, you know, and that was, you know, that ended about, you know, 2.5 years ago or so already. And so that, you know, part of me says, yes, I get that. And I chose to do that because I wanted to challenge myself and hold myself accountable to creating something and building time for it in my schedule and doing it every day and penalizing myself, not really penalizing myself, but you know, if I couldn't make it that year, it would have been, you know, all for nothing. And I'm glad that I did it. But what you made me realize actually was it was an arbitrary start and stop date, right? It was because it was my birthday. So that's no different than January 1st, gonna do a New Year's resolution. I did the same thing just 3 months earlier, you know? So it's not all that different. So I guess I can sort of understand the, you know, that being the vehicle for trying to do something that that is in betterment and holding yourself accountable to it. So I don't know. I guess I can't really, you know, crap on New Year's resolutions being arbitrary when I did something that was a project of like self betterment and fulfillment based on an arbitrary date, right? I'm going to do this from September 26th to September 25th the next year. And how's that any different? You know? So it's just, you know,
Argue it's a little different because, you know, part of your criteria there was everyone does this. So your birth date is personal to you. So in a way, like I could see where you would feel better about that. It would feel less hokey because it's not, not everyone's doing the year of Brandon, right?
Yeah.
It was a personal thing to you. But yeah, your point of it isn't it, you are anchoring it to something.
Yeah.
But like, don't you think like there's something about rituals, even if you think stuff is hokey or sometimes there's some stuff that's either coincidence or intentional that we think is cool. Like right. my dad used to tell this story about like his grandfather laughing at him as he was trying to pick up a dime in the snow with mittens on, and he couldn't do it. And then after his grandfather died, he would always find dimes everywhere. And my dad had polio as a, mm-hmm. I think preteen, and his legs were degenerative. And because of that, he kind of walked while facing the ground. So it actually like he looked at the ground all the time because he had to watch his every step.
Right.
So he found a lot of loose change on the ground. I imagine he found nickels and quarters and all sorts of stuff, but he fixated on the significance of those dimes mm-hmm. because he had this memory. I don't even know if it was a memory, if it was like one of those family like folk tales that like get told over and over because he was probably so young. He doesn't, he didn't actually have the memory himself. But I feel like we want to make these connections. We want to see that there's significance in the things that we do in life, and that there's stuff out there that's looking out for us or aligning with what our mission is. It's why we have phrases like "it's meant to be" or "it's God's will" and things like that. So, like, mm-hmm. I really feel like we have this. We draw energy from being able to make these connections to things that we like see as related, which it might not actually. I mean, it might be more circumstance, you know, like just random than we actually give it credit for. But we're programmed to make connections. It's the way that we see the world. We organize things. It's how we learn, is by relating things to one another. Yeah. So I woke up one day and decided to do something seems less compelling than like, man, I woke up on my 40th birthday and I realized I hadn't done anything with my life. So I decided that for every day for my 40th year, I was going to make a video.
Was this Eeyore's 40th year?
I'm going to be on YouTube.
Pooh wouldn't share any of his honey with me. So my tea was bitter.
I can just picture you reading that to your kids and like that being the character that you really lean into.
I really like reading stories to my kids. And then I've got a like inflated sense of ego of like every time I read a story and I think I did it pretty good. I was like, man, I should make a YouTube video. I get a lot of hits on these kids' stories and in these really cool voices.
You might as well. You know, I a couple minutes into this conversation, I had it made up in my mind, like, you're not going to make me like this because it's arbitrary. You yourself don't even really buy into the concept of it. But over the course of the discussion, you know, I kind of, and I don't even think you were advocating for this, but what I heard is when someone assigns value and meaning to it, if that makes it work for them, then that's a good thing, you know, and you probably shouldn't dump on it. What you've done works for you. It's clearly, you know, worked for you, even though it may not have been intentionally aligned to a New Year's resolution, but it's probably close enough where you could call it that. And what I did with my you know, my 40th birthday, trying to do that for an entire year, otherwise I wouldn't have made 365 videos, three good ones. But, you know, having something, some sort of magical value assigned to it, did carry me through. And, you know, after 100 days, it's like, oh man, I can't let up now. You know, I don't want to start over. I don't want to, you know, chalk this up as a failure. I made it public enough that there was some accountability there where, you know, people were, you know, a handful of people, but still, you know, people were kind of cheering me on and egging me on in a way. So, you know, if it takes someone who isn't very healthy and January 1st, 2021, they're going to say, I'm going to change my life for the better. And that is a reason to come out of this year and really, you know, hit the ground running and change their lives for the better, then who can deny that, right? You know, just because it's what everyone's doing. Well, maybe everyone's doing it because it works for them. You know, we hear a lot of the stories of how people fail about it, but I bet you there are just as many, if not more, of people who did kind of stick to it, did enjoy it, did get value out of it. And even if it didn't last an entire year, if it lasted a month and they got some value and joy out of it, great. You know what? There's enough negativity in the world to wanna piss on someone's parade, you know? So I kind of talked myself out of not liking this just for the sake of not liking it. But I've got to say that, you know, throughout this conversation, I think in a way that I can't remember in any of our other discussions, I did have sort of a shift in, you know, from beginning to end point of my thoughts on this. So that's kind of interesting and kind of cool that that could happen, talking about piss and a lot of stuff in between.
And we did that, and it's been until 1 hour and 15 minutes until I mentioned R. Kelly.
Oh man, this could have gone a whole different direction.
So let's do the thing.
R. Kelly's resolution: not peeing on you.
Brandon.
Or peeing on those over 18.
Now that we've talked for an hour, 15 minutes, and 27, 8, 9 seconds about New Year's resolutions, do you now like New Year's resolutions?
I am ashamed, but also somewhat proud to say that, yes, I do see the value in them. And anyone who wants to better themselves is all right in my book. I don't care how you do it. It doesn't matter what some poor schlub on the internet like me thinks. If it works for you, it works for you. Yeah, I like it. That probably didn't go the way you thought it was going to go, huh?
I didn't think you were gonna go for that.
What a happy accident there.
Hey, it was a good conversation. It was the process of getting to this point that I appreciate the most.
Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. It's the pissing on the back of the toilet in the dark. That makes you appreciate the end result. So with that being said, thank you for tuning in. If you've listened this far, I'm Brandon. That's Jeff. Hope you have a happy holiday season. Have a great weekend. And we'll check you later.
Make next year a better year.
For sure. Your better year.